Hi, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. You know, if there's one thing we can all agree on, it's that Americans love sports. Pandemic aside, of course, wherever you go in this diverse land of ours, there's a good chance you'll find a group of fans sitting in a bar spilling beer and passionately yelling at the TV. Over all the excitement, cheers, and jeers, you might be paying little mind to who's actually broadcasting that game and what it took for it to make it to the screen in the first place. Well, once upon a time, the broadcast TV trinity of ABC, CBS, and NBC were the only game in town when it came to sports. But when ESPN entered the scene in 1979, the status quo was about to experience a monumental shift. Later, the introduction of Fox Sports in the early 90s would usher in an era of cable sports competition that would come to redefine game day as we know it. But along the way, these networks underwent acquisitions, mergers, programming reboots, and many more ups and downs. Today, the ESPN and Fox Sports rivalry is still alive and well as these sports broadcast giants figure how to keep up with an age of streaming, heightened political consciousness, and online competitors. Here to help us dive into this wide world of sports broadcasting, Richard Deitch. He is a sports writer at The Athletic and host of the Sports Media Podcast covering, you guessed it, the sports media landscape, both on screen and behind the scenes. We'll be talking about where these network rivalries stand today and what's in store for the future of sports media. That's all coming up next. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Richard Deitch, welcome to Business Wars.
Great to be here.
You know, for a while there, ESPN had the game to themselves, not counting, of course, the old-timers, CBS, NBC, and ABC. Fox enters the scene. And I'm curious about, you know, the rivalry itself. Do you think that was good for, well, I want to say sports media, but I also want to sort of say sports overall? I mean, what was that a net positive, do you think, for those who love to follow sports?
It certainly was a positive for the leagues, because whenever you can create a market between either two bidders or multiple bidders, what happens? Well, inevitably, the bid goes up and leagues get paid. So Fox and ESPN have obviously been great business for the leagues that they are media rights partners with.
Yeah.
Has it been good for on-air talent? It's been exceptional for on-air talent. Again, the same exact premise lies here. If you have multiple entities who are doing the same thing and need people to present news, present highlights, call games, well, again, that's going to create great business for the on-air talent, as well as obviously the multitude of agencies that represent the on-air talent. So Fox and ESPN being competitors has been very, very good for the people who work in the business. Where I would say it's neutral or perhaps negative is for consumers. Someone ultimately has to foot the bill when it comes to the billions of dollars for the NFL or the billions of dollars for college sports. And those costs are ultimately passed on to the consumer. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, ESPN for, I mean, man, for certainly as long as I've covered it, but even I imagine heading before that, has always been the highest costing cable channel for subscribers, and many times, you know, 3, 4, 5 times more costly than its next closest cable competitor. It's one of the reasons that obviously FS1 wanted to get into the game. That is a billion-dollar business.
Why do you think ESPN has that sort of leverage? Is it because they've been around for so long? Is it what accounts for the fact that they have consistently raised their prices? People stick with them nonetheless.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is this: sports remains the only thing that is DVR proof or PVR proof if you're in Canada. You must watch it live. You cannot watch a sporting event after the fact, because the likelihood is in a 24/7 universe, you will be told by your friends, you will be told by some source, you'll be told by your phone the result of this. What does that mean? Well, if you're an advertiser and a media buyer, that means that's probably the best place where I can put my product. I could try to get my product to an engaged audience, because they're not going to look at this later through commercials. They want to watch what happens now. So then if you expand on your question, it makes ESPN incredibly valuable if ESPN has the most attractive sports rights inventory to the largest base of consumers. If you want to watch any college basketball game or any college football game of significance during the regular season, if you want to watch the NFL on Monday night, if you want to watch hockey, regular season hockey today in 2022, if you want to watch some of these great soccer leagues that exist either globally or domestically, you have to make a choice as a consumer, either to get ESPN or not to watch that. And that gives them a ton of leverage.
If you were to pull back, just looking at the landscape today, who would you say is ahead? Who's leading in this contest? Is it ESPN or Fox?
It's a great question. Before I even answer that, I will say this, and as someone who's covered this, I've always found this incredibly amusing. Both of these places consider themselves scrappy underdogs, which is hilarious in itself. These are two of the biggest overdogs in the history of planet Earth. That said, they do think of themselves as that for probably interesting reasons. Both started with the larger marketplace thinking that they would never get to where they got to. That's certainly the case with ESPN, as your program has covered. And obviously, Rupert Murdoch, when he started Fox, nobody in the world thought that a upstart could compete with the NBCs and the CBSs and the, you know, the Seinfelds and the Cheers and et cetera. But Murdoch proved that he could. Who stands like at the leaderboard at this point? I think clearly it's ESPN. You know, Fox is a behemoth. And if you have an NFL contract, you know, you're not the sisters of the poor. You're a major player. But look at the portfolio that ESPN has. It's far greater than Fox. They have to program multiple 24/7 networks. Their streaming service, ESPN Plus, is much more. Fox Sports doesn't necessarily have any kind of streaming service in terms of capacity, in terms of subscribers, compared to ESPN at this point. So ESPN is creating a secondary business with its streaming capacity. So in terms of breadth, in terms of, I think, consumer consumption on a daily basis, I think ESPN is ahead. That said, you know, when Fox has a mega event, whether it's the Super Bowl or whether it's the World Series or whether it's the Big Ten Championship, you know, they are the most significant player in force and force that day. But I would say overall, ESPN still remains, at least in my opinion, and I think backed up factually and anecdotally, the biggest brand name in sports in the United States.
If you're watching a game and someone said, it's going to be on Fox, or it's going to be on ESPN, do you have a difference in your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think the reaction would be, if you want to try to get a little granular here, I think Fox is probably a little bit looser, a little bit more geared towards entertainment, where ESPN might be more traditional of a broadcast. And I think, again, part of that is the DNA of ESPN includes these sort of editorial and journalistic sensibilities, where Fox, I think, far and away focuses kind of more on the entertainment aspect of sports. So at the highest levels, when it comes to production as a viewer, I think they're both excellent. I think one has more entertainment sensibilities, which makes sense just given it's Fox. And the other, I think, is more based in sort of more of the traditional network broadcasting that we saw in the 80s and the 90s at the NBCs, CBSs, et cetera.
A little earlier, you were talking about, you know, the audacity of taking on some of those early players in broadcasting, the NBCs, the CBSs of this world. But I guess the thrust of what I'm curious about is why it's been so hard for these legacy players to go toe-to-toe with the top dogs as we understand them to be these days, ESPN or you know, Fox.
Well, let's take CBS, because I think they're a pretty good example of the different kinds of philosophies here. CBS made a decision very early on that they were not going to break the bank when it comes to sports rights for the CBS Sports Network, which is their cable equivalent. They were going to keep that network as lean as possible. So that's the big difference, is really it just comes down to inventory. That ESPN and ESPN2 as cable entities just have far more inventory and far more higher-end inventory than a CBS Sports Network does. The challenge for FS1 is they're kind of, to me, a little bit stuck in the middle, where they have some high-end inventory, but at the same time, it's not enough to, I think, make them a compelling 24/7 entity. So what they decided was they were going to really go heavy on opinion, particularly when it comes to their morning and early afternoon programming. And then at a certain point, particularly when it comes to prime time, we will shift more to live sports. And certainly when it comes to the weekend, particularly they're almost wall-to-wall kind of live sporting events.
We got to put a pin in what you were talking about there on the opinion programming and all of that, because we're going to be talking about that in more in just a few minutes. But, you know, the content side of the game, you know, what you have rights to, I guess traditionally NFL has been the golden goose here. But in the past, that's sort of given the NFL a lot of power over the networks, or at least it seems traditionally speaking. I mean, our season talked about the ESPN fictional drama Playmakers from the early 2000s, and they canceled that show.
Remember it well.
Oh, yeah. A lot of pushback from the NFL here. But given the way that the deals are structured and what you've seen sort of behind the scenes, who owns who here? Is it the networks that have the NFL by the neck, or is it more the other way around, do you think?
It's the NFL. I wouldn't even hesitate on that. The NFL holds all the cards. Now, some people might say, well, that's ridiculous because these networks are paying the NFL billions of dollars. And doesn't your billions of dollars afford you some kind of leverage here? I might ask the same thing if someone's giving to a candidate. The you know, you give millions of dollars to a candidate, the candidate doesn't necessarily have to follow through when they're in office. The NFL has something that all these media outlets desire. They have the most valuable piece of content that exists in the United States. There is nothing at this point, nothing, literally no other entertainment content that can get the kind of communal experience the NFL has. We are taping this very shortly after the conference championship games in the NFL just were played. Those games averaged 45 million, 50 million, with one of those games having a high, so basically sort of when it sort of tops out as the most average viewers at one time, of 60 million viewers. There is nothing else in the United States, maybe with the exception of a presidential debate, that can bring that many people around something to watch. So the NFL controls all the cards here, and they will absolutely push back against their network partners if those networks are investigating something the NFL doesn't want, if they're reporting something the NFL doesn't want. It is then incumbent upon, obviously, those rights holder partners to push back and to say, yeah, we are also an independent editorial place that is going to report on this. And that's been one of the most fascinating things about covering ESPN, is when they don't push back, as you saw in Playmakers and League of Denial when it came to their concussion research, but then also when they do push back, which they have different times when they push back on the NFL and really cover something hard and with journalistic gravitas. This absolutely does create tension between those outlets. I would think that's a good, healthy tension. Very rarely does Fox Sports ever do something that really angers or bothers the NFL. And when it comes to the networks, the NBCs, the CBSs, et cetera, they will always usually punt that stuff to their news division. So that's the interesting push and pull when it comes to ESPN and the NFL. But by and large, to answer your question, the NFL has all the leverage because the NFL knows that they can very easily X out one of these traditional outlets that has been a rights holder and bring in someone new, whether it would be an Apple, an Amazon, or whatever company X that hasn't been invented. The NFL has just content that essentially at this point is the most DVR-proofed content that exists out there.
Do you think that the NFL should have that kind of weight?
No, it's a terrible thing for, I would argue it's a terrible thing for sport and society. It is not a healthy relationship because I think one person really has the dominance in the relationship, and it's the NFL. It takes, in my opinion, and I'm not throwing this word around lightly, it takes some courage for a rights holder partner to report on things that the NFL does not want you to report on. I'm talking about concussions and like declines of high school participation when it comes to football. I'm talking about if a coach decides to file a lawsuit against the NFL saying that people of color are discriminated against when it comes to hiring. That's the kind of stuff that the NFL does not want out there, and understandably so. That is not good for business. I would say that there are other leagues that are incredibly valuable, like the NBA and obviously all the college sports, and they have some leverage because they're going to have a lot of bidders. And they're going to have a lot of networks that want their programming, but none of those networks come close to the kind of leverage the NFL has. Because I would sort of make the argument, and I don't think it's anything crazy or revolutionary, if you do not have NFL programming in some form as a sports network in the United States, you are essentially a non-factor, in my opinion, when it comes to media.
Well, I think this is an appropriate place to call time out if it's all right. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about some of the talent behind these networks. You are listening to a special edition of Business Wars, and we're talking with Richard Deitch. He's a sports writer at The Athletic and host of the Sports Media Podcast. Stay with us. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Welcome back. Our guest today on this edition of Business Wars, Richard Deitch. He covers sports media for The Athletic. Richard, I guess many viewers tune into ESPN for the charismatic personalities on screen. When did that aspect of the sports networks become a thing, right? I mean, the rise of the sports commentator.
Well, we've had opinionists for a long time in sports, and once upon a time back in the day, they were called columnists, right? You know, when the heyday of the newspapers, I mean, these were major heavyweights offering opinion about what they saw. That world, I think, morphed at a certain point to sports talk radio. What we saw, I think, in the 90s and the 2000s was we started to see a lot of sports writers, or at least people who started their careers in print, start to morph onto television. Mm-hmm. Pardon the interruption, sort of at least in modern times, is probably the most famous of that. Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon were well-known writers. They eventually went on television and ESPN. Obviously, was a massive, massive hit for ESPN. ESPN has then since sort of taken that kind of format where you have, you know, person X on one side, person Y on one side, and they have just sort of, you know, come up with a multitude of shows that are really sort of just an offshoot of what Pardon the Interruption was, whether that's, you know, First Take, Around the Horn, or almost essentially any kind of debate segment that they might have on their SportsCenter shows. This is very easy, kind of cheap television to produce, but that is the reason it exists. One, we are certainly a debate culture when it comes to sports, and two, it's so cost-friendly compared to rights, sports rights, that you can run this kind of stuff almost at any time of day, and even if you don't get a massive audience, you will get some audience.
But it would seem to me that especially these days, when everything is contentious, it seems, that would be a pretty big turn off. No, I mean, I guess you have to strike a balance. What makes a good debate program and what makes a real clunker?
Well, here's what I would sort of counter to you. The reality is conflict television sells. Conflict television can be monetized. Conflict television brings eyeballs. I would love to see more policy-based shows and news. But the reality is, whether you're a producer at CNN, MSNBC, or Fox, you know full well you will get more eyeballs if two people are complaining about something or debating about something versus something dense like here is why the tax code works as it is. This same exact thing exists in sports. Yeah, you can. It would be great if some of these shows decided to like focus on, you know, why is the IOC working with the Chinese to put the Olympics in Beijing and what are the ramifications of that? That I think would be really noble and interesting journalism. But the reality is, instead, if I have one person on one side saying that Tim Tebow is the greatest quarterback since Terry Bradshaw, and another person saying, what are you talking about? Tim Tebow doesn't belong on an NFL roster at any position. The likelihood is I can get more eyeballs on my Tebow discussion than a larger examination of something else. I think the reality is, especially for a topic like sports and especially for topics like politics, I think inevitably there is conflict and there is debate when it comes to different POVs and different philosophies. And these television programmers have just recognized that and in many, many ways, obviously taken advantage of that.
When you think of the big names, a lot of them have jumped around from network to network. And I'm curious, what is it driving these hosts to switch it up?
I mean, you know, at least in terms of some of the larger names, you know, Skip Bayless, Colin Cowherd, those are two obviously that left ESPN who ultimately went to FS1. Finances are the main reason. And then obviously, I think maybe like someone in Cowherd's case, creative freedom might have been one. He got to sort of do more things at Fox, has now created his own podcast network, which I admire. I would say here's another thing. This is much more of a 2020, 2021, 2022 premise. Where the game has changed now is that individual talents can go out and form their own media companies. You saw that with Dan Le Batard, for example. You can get major money, in Le Batard's case, obviously a DraftKings, a sports gambling company. You can get major money to fund what you do, and then you yourself can become the distributor of your own content. That, to me, is game-changing. Bill Simmons, obviously, did that at The Ringer, and then when The Ringer was bought by Spotify. So not everybody can do that, but if you do, if you have grown a name at ESPN and you have some savvy, you have some moxie, you can then create your own essentially content farm. And I don't mean that pejoratively, your own content place where you can do the kind of content you want without a corporate overlord, so to speak, and then distribute that content out so people can get it. So one of the ways where the game really has changed, and particularly in the last two or three years, is one, distribution, obviously because of the web, is easier than it's ever been. But two, there is so much money out there, particularly in the sports gambling community, that is willing to fund the kind of content that you want to do. So the legacy brands, the Foxes, the ESPNs, the NBCs, the CBSs, they're still going to get people. They still obviously are going to pay well. There's going to be some security there. But man, there is also a big gold rush for some well-known people who want to take a chance at being their own distributor.
Who are the rock stars in this field? Who are the ones that can call the shots for themselves, that can, you know, go to some big gaming site and command top dollar? Who are they?
If we're going to strictly sort of keep it to opinion, and again, I don't think it's necessarily the easiest thing to be an opinionist and to start your own distribution place. You really have to be famous. And so somebody like Stephen A. Smith at ESPN, who's their highest paid on-air talent, that's somebody obviously who is well-known and famous enough where, for instance, if he decided to partner with a FanDuel or a DraftKings or a BetMGM, and they set him up with, you know, a glistening studio somewhere in New York or Las Vegas, and were willing to put all his content onto a site and a podcast network, he would be someone who would be a major attraction to somebody, and I think a company would take their chances on. But as a general sort of answer to your question, the people who could do it are well-known people with followings on social media, followings on traditional legacy media. Those would be the kind of people that there would be some significant investment in. So not everybody can do it, but those who are very well known at the Foxes or the NBCs or the CBSs or the ESPNs, those are the ones that, if they're willing to make the leap, could probably find some success outside.
My guest is Richard Deitch. He's a reporter for The Athletic, focusing on sports media. And we're talking about ESPN versus Fox Sports. Time for another timeout. We'll be back in just a moment. We get support from Court. You know, the way people work is changing, and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Court's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Court Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at Court, that's CORT.com/office. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. And we're back for this special edition of Business Wars, talking with Richard Deitch, a reporter for The Athletic, who focuses on sports media. Richard, let's talk about sports during the pandemic. I mean, here we are nearly 2 years since that initial lockdown, still experiencing cancellations due to COVID cases. But of course, nothing compares to those early days of, I guess it was March 2020, when everything just came to a standstill. Do you think they experienced any significant shifts sort of long-term as a result of all of the changes that have happened?
It's a great question. And obviously, that's a billion-dollar business kind of question, because it sort of it fuels the business of sports media in many ways in terms of consumption. If you want some data points, you can look at the NFL this year. Viewership was up significantly over the 2020 pandemic year, and a little bit over or flat with 2019. So that suggests, at least when it comes to the NFL, that's good news to me, because that means that they've sort of maintained their audience and in some ways grown a little bit. The postseason NFL numbers have been way up over 2019 and 2020. So again, that would give you the suggestion that people are returning to consumption levels. I think to honestly answer the question, you really sort of just have to go sport by sport to see where your sport is in 2022 versus where it was, let's say, in February of 2020, sort of right before at least our world in the United States changed. It's also hard to really answer the question, because the attendance figures of sports are nowhere near back to where they were, because the different municipalities have different rules. So where, let's say, in Texas, where, you know, you could see a sold-out stadium for the Dallas Cowboys or the Texas Rangers, the crowd in New York City or the crowd in Baltimore, Maryland might be far different, just given the restrictions based on those municipalities. My sense is that I think sports is always going to be an important part of our culture. And, you know, it really is an escape valve for people. I'm optimistic. If you look at it in terms of the business end of this, I mean, I saw the other day what the NBC is charging for a 30-second Super Bowl ad. And trust me, it hasn't gone down. It's gone up. So if that's any kind of indication, you know, the business world, I think, is still going to be there, certainly for the premium sports where they know people are going to tune in.
I want to ask you about the change in sort of the timbre of some of the sports coverage, especially on ESPN and FS1. A lot of people talking about, stick to sports. And this seems to have been the result of a lot of what happened in 2020. Can you maybe say a little bit more about the timbre of some of the conversations that have been a part of the opinion coverage on these two networks?
Sports has always had a connection to things beyond sports, politics, gender, race. Jackie Robinson, Jesse Owens, Tommy Smith, John Carlos, to Colin Kaepernick. If you're just being, I think, naive if you don't think the intersection of race and sports and the intersection of politics and sports didn't exist in the same way I can mention Billie Jean King and Babe Diedrichson and Title IX. And I think, you know, people who are listening will get my point. Where it got really obviously overheated is with the Colin Kaepernick situation, where that became obviously a very, very prominent story in the sporting press, and there was significant pushback.
This is the take a knee for the
correct
anthem.
And again, more of professional athletes being very front and center when it comes to social justice. And there's always going to be a portion of the audience that does not want that. They want sports to be apolitical, and they want sports not to have any of political overtones or social justice overtones. And I think there are certainly television programmers in particular who would love for everything in sports to be apolitical, because that gives your best chance to have the most people under your tent. I just think it's naive. I think it it ultimately doesn't examine the realities of what sports are today. But the reason why it became such a cultural hot button issue is it morphed from, I think, a smaller bubble to a larger bubble. I mean, when the White House podium is calling out somebody from ESPN, who obviously has tweeted some remarks about the President of the United States, I mean, that's where the ball game changes. This is no longer just a small group of people like myself who are writing about sports media. This now becomes a major part of the conversation on CNN or on Fox News. So everything has been amplified as a general rule in the United States. And the intersection of sports and society is just one of those things that has become amplified. And people have their own opinions on this. And they're, generally speaking, unwilling to sort of find any middle ground. And that's why you have a lot of polarization on this topic.
What does that mean for these two networks? Are they accepting of the sort of the broader conversation in the way that you're describing it? Or do you find that the pushback is such that the networks just want to get back to playing ball?
So let's take Fox, for instance. FS1 really tries very hard to stay away from it. It's, again, not part of their network apparatus because they do not have a 24/7 newsroom. They do not have the kind of shows that ESPN does where they'll examine these issues. It's just not part of their DNA. I think they're making a calculated business decision, and in some ways, it's a smart business decision. In other ways, it really honestly lacks courage and honesty, in my opinion. Now let's take ESPN, because that's where the story is. I think some of this is an optics issue, and I think ESPN certainly did their best to try to lessen the heat on a lot of these conversations. And they certainly were addressing, for a period of time, more social issues in sports than they had before. But they're not dumb people. They know when they delve into this too much, they're going to get pushback from their audience because, again, ESPN is a national network. They grow across the country. They have people who watch it in red states. They have people who watch it in blue states.
What does that mean if you're a host who wants to go a little deeper? I mean, is there space for that? Or do you have to go to some younger competing outlet like The Ringer or SB Nation?
Well, I think there are places for sure at ESPN's and NBC's, et cetera, where you can do this, but you can only go so far. Even someone as a legacy person like Bob Costas, he's been very outspoken about this. He could only go so far to talk about a host country's issues while hosting the Olympic Games. So if you are someone who really wants to do this kind of stuff, ESPN is probably not for you. You're not going to be able to do the kind of examinations and speak with the ultimate freedom that you want. That said, here would be my counter to this. you also could have a massive amount of impact if you stay at ESPN and try to navigate those waters, because you could really probably reach more people than you would at a smaller place where you might have that freedom. So that's really the challenge here, is you have a great job and there are things you want to say or there are things you believe in. You have to navigate against what I think generally speaking is a conservative. I'm not talking about politically conservative, but sort of structurally conservative organization that at its sort of ideal wants the most people to come inside their tent. And generally speaking, the way to do that is to really not be critical about anything, to not be that controversial.
Let's talk about another phenomenon that's happening here. Millions of people cutting the cord, right? Streamers getting into the sports broadcast rights game. Amazon spending a lot of money to win the Thursday night football package. That could be a seismic shift on par with Fox landing the NFL rights back in the 90s. No, I mean, who's next here? And how do you see this playing out?
Could be. The real sort of your answer to your question will come in 2025 and 2026 when we get a real sense of how popular Amazon Prime's coverage of Thursday Night Football will be, or if we see some premium rights go to like an Apple or go to an Amazon or go to a Netflix, where previously, obviously, it would have been to these traditional legacy companies. But the Amazon deal for the NFL is a big one, and it's one to watch. It's the first time ever that a streamer will have exclusive NFL content, meaning that the only way for you to watch Thursday Night Football, if you are not in the home cities of that game, is you must subscribe to Amazon to get that. And that's a fundamental change where, whether it was cable or, you know, over-the-air television, you have, generally speaking, always been able to get the National Football League games. I think there is no doubt in my mind that you are going to see major championship titles on these streaming services. The real question is going to be 5-10 years from now, will things like the NBA Finals, the National Football Championship, the World Series, will they still be on some combination of over-the-air or cable television? And that, I think, that discussion we will know in 3 or 4 or 5 years when the American public will tell us if cord cutting has continued or if we have found the floor on cord cutting and the floor is not so great where these cable companies are forced to put this kind of programming on their streaming services.
We've covered a lot of ground here, and we're talking now about the future of sports media. You think about rights packages versus on-air talent and what means more to these companies. You think about the streaming factor. You think about politics and of course, these new outlets that have sprung up that give some of the bigger voices a place to sound off. Where do you see the future of sports media going in the near term, 5-10 years out, Richard?
I love this question because if I really can answer it perfectly, I'd be charging a couple $100,000 for my consulting advice. Here's the reality is one that's not such a grand pronouncement. Streaming will continue to grow. There's no question about that. Do the streaming services have a ceiling? Most likely they do. But you're going to continue to see more programming on these streaming services, the ESPN Pluses, the Paramount Plus, the Peacocks, because these companies know that long-term, that's their business. Long-term, that's where they're going to make their money. I would imagine that sports rights fees will continue to go up. People talk about a bubble, but I haven't seen it yet. The NBA is coming up, and the Big Ten is coming up, and these are premium properties that I think multiple bidders are going to want. So I don't see some kind of bubble happening soon. I see consolidation in the marketplace. I think at a certain point, some of the smaller streaming services are either going to get bought by the bigger places or maybe not make it, just because I think the American consumer is not going to subscribe to 7, 8, 9 different streaming services. I think there's going to be a finite number on that. And then at least in my world, I mean, I think the thing that everybody's watching, if you take a place like ESPN, is like, how long can they do this dual business of having a cable entity, a cable property where people still subscribe to on their cable services and they still, you know, make money on that in addition to their streaming property, ESPN Plus, which obviously millions and millions have subscribed to. The question is, how long can these sort of dual businesses exist? Can they exist ad infinitum? I doubt it, but maybe they'll exist longer than we might expect. But that's really the big question, is like, when does a place like ESPN just go direct to consumer? And I don't know the answer to that. But if you have a good feel as to when the answer is, you're probably going to make some very, very smart decisions when it comes to the sports media, because that's the big question out there is what is streaming long term, and can cable sort of still and the network still sustain themselves with sports content?
Richard Deitch covers sports media for The Athletic. You can also catch him on the Sports Media Podcast wherever you listen. Richard, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us on Business Wars. It's been a real pleasure.
You guys have a great show. My pleasure.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Episode 6 of ESPN versus Fox Sports for Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Kelly Kyle and Peter Arcuni produced this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor, edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Additional audio assistance by Sergio Enriquez. Dave Schilling is our producer. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.